All right, let's begin. Can you hear me in the back? Great. So, Henry and Philip are in Norway for a conference today and for the start of the week, so unfortunately you'll be listening to me. My name is Toni Taipalus, if you haven't met me already. And today's lecture is about the logical structure of the XML, and this is the second and last part. And I was watching Philip's recordings from last year, and he said at the beginning of the lecture that this is the most dry lecture on the whole course, so brace yourselves. All right. First things first, a little recap on the element declarations in DTD, and this is actually the topic for the third assignments as well. And these are probably the, or will be the two most important slides for the third assignments. And the third assignments will probably be the most difficult on this course, at least on the practice side of things. Okay, so a quick recap. The element declaration in DTD always follows the form of the element name and the element content, and types of elements. There were, for example, these kinds. I've used the colors to, well, you get the idea. So there can be empty elements. Elements can be defined as any, which means that they can have pretty much any content. This is very rare and not actually useful because we use the DTD to define the syntax of our document, and if we say that our document can contain anything, that's not really defining a syntax. There can be just text content with the hashtag PCData, and the most common, I believe, is the child elements inside the brackets with an inner comma list. And of course, if you have any questions or comments, please ask and comment. And Philip talked about mixed content in the last lecture, and mixed content are always defined like this. And I believe I mentioned mixed content in the assignments discussion last Thursday. And in a nutshell, you should avoid mixed content. Any questions so far? This is all familiar stuff, right? And the metasymbols are possible for child elements. This means the cardinality operators, the asterisk, plus sign, question mark, but not for mixed content. And the other recap slide, the attribute declarations in DTD, always of the form. At list, element name, attribute type, and default declaration. And the attribute type and the attribute types relevant for this course are basically these four: the character data, name token, which is pretty much like character data but with a stricter rules. For example, white spaces are not allowed, tabs are not allowed, and so forth. And then the IDs. And the values of the ID attribute must be unique throughout the document, regardless of which element's ID is defined. And lastly, the enumerated type, in which the attribute value is selected from a predefined list of values. In this case, from A, B, C. Only A, B, and C are the, well, correct or valid attribute values for attribute named ATT. And the default declaration defines whether the attribute value and the attribute name is required, optional, or perhaps fixed. Yeah.
I have a question on the ID. Should it be required or fixed? Or is there any
required? it should be required because fixed means that we have a default value. And what's the default value for an ID? If you give a default value, you are kind of saying that it's okay if you leave this blank. We'll just give the default value. And when you give two default values to the IDs, the document is no longer valid because there are two same IDs. Everyone else is following as well. So there cannot be two ID attribute values of the ID attributes of the same value inside the one document. Great. Then the practical part, this is actually a good slide to, well, go through when you are doing the assignment 3, in which you need to define the DTD or document type definition for your Finland document, or the country's document, which contains the provinces and regions and so forth. And as I discussed in the assignment discussions, you should start with the element structure, and you should go for the element-centric approach if it's possible. And when it becomes impossible or inconvenient, you should use attributes. So go with the element-centric approach and use attributes if you must. So start with a simple question, which element is the root element of the document? And when you're writing the DTD, this means in practice, or in layman's terms, what follows the doc type keyword. This sounds familiar. Right. All right. Second thing, you should look for other elements present in the document. And for all of the elements, you need to define the less than sign exclamation mark element and then the element name and so forth. So second thing you need to do, find the elements within the document. The third thing, which elements are the children of this element? And this is, again, in layman's terms, what goes inside the brackets after the element name. So in this example, on the right, we have defined an element named A, and we are waiting for the input inside the brackets. So what are the children of or child elements of element A? And this means immediate child elements. Do not confuse child elements with descendant elements. We'll get to this child, descendant, parent, ancestor thing in a minute. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay. We are going to have a little practical discussion shortly. So the doc type comes from the document type definitions. It basically means the DTD. The keyword doc type basically says that here is where the DTD starts. Okay. We'll get to that. We'll return to that in a minute. And then, how often can the child elements occur? So these are the cardinality operators. What follows the child element name inside the brackets? And there were four possibilities. Nothing, question mark, plus sign, or the asterisk. And each of these meant a different thing for how many times the child element can occur inside the parent. And then find the elements that have only the only character data inside them. So those elements which have text inside them, or perhaps nothing. And then do the attributes. Which elements have attributes, which types the attributes are, should they be mandatory or not. Okay. We'll take a look at the practical example of all those things, so you'll get the idea of how to start writing DTD. And the day after tomorrow in the assignment discussion, in the second assignment discussion, I'll be showing examples on how to write DTD in a much larger document. I'm going to switch the display so that we get something for the guys and girls who watch these lectures at home. I have an example document and this is not it. Sorry. Here is, some of you are familiar with this document. It's the example answer for the extra assignment 1A. Can you see this in the back? You can see that you can read the text. Great. So here's the example. You can find this file in Optima. It's the example answer for the 1A, extra assignment 1A. And when we start to write the DTD or the document type definition, it always starts with a less than exclamation mark and the keyword doc type, which tells us that this is the beginning of the DTD in this document. And then if we follow the guidelines on the slides, first thing we should do is find the root element of the XML document. And what is the root element in this case? You all know it. PS3. So what follows the doc type is the name of the root element. And then the second part of writing the DTD is to find the elements that are present in the document. And, well, I suggest you use some kind of marking tool so that you can, well, you can keep track of what elements are in the document and make sure that you write them all. So in this document, obviously, the first element that is in the document is the PS3, which is the root element. I'm going to put a little plus sign on my editor there so I can remember it. This document is not extensive, so I don't think I'm going to, well, forget it, but just in case. What other elements are present in this document? Yeah, there is the process element and the name element, and are there any other elements? No. Yes. Yeah, I marked all those three. Yeah. Great. So next thing you need to do is write the element declarations in the DTD. So the less than sign exclamation mark element keyword and then the name of the element which you want to define. PS3 process and name. Great. So and next thing, you need to find the elements which are the children of these elements. So if we start with the process tree or PS3 element, which element or what element is the child of this PS3 element? Process is the child of PS3. So you write the element child element's name inside the brackets. And if there are more, you just separate them with a comma and a space. Great. And then on to the process element. What elements are children of process? Process and name. Great. And as Philip has, and Henry probably has told you, the order in which you define the children in the comma list matters. So first, process and then name. Is that correct? No. If we look at the document structure, there's name and process on the inside the first process, so we need to fix this in the proper order. All right, and then the name element. Which element or what element is the child? Yeah. PC data. Yeah. There are no child elements, so there's only past character data inside the name element. Great. Now we have found the root element, the other elements, defined them, found their children, and next thing we need to do is define how often the elements can occur. And let's start at the beginning again with the PS3 element and its first and only child process. How many times can process occur inside the PS3 element? In this document, it only occurs once. And now we need to, well, decide how many processes can there be in the on the first level of the process tree. We could argue that if we have a process tree, that means we have at least one process. Right. So that leaves us with the cardinality operators nothing, so I leave this as is, or we can use the plus sign, which means that there are one too many processes inside a process tree. All right, I'm going to go with this, with nothing. Great, and then on to the next one, process and name, how many times the name element can occur inside the process element. If we look at the data, we can see that each of the processes has a name, so we can, well, yeah, once. And if I leave, again, if I leave nothing here, it means that the process has name and only one name. That sounds good. A process can't have two names, or the process cannot be nameless. And then the process inside process. What about that? We see that the inside the first process, which is named systemd or systemdaemon, there are multiple processes inside that process. Right. Zero or many. Yeah, great. And what was the cardinality operator for zero or many? It was the star sign, right, the asterisk. And this means that the process element can have zero to many child processes. And the other cardinality operators which I discussed or are shown on the slide where the question mark, which means that the process can have 0 to 1 child processes, or the plus sign, which means that the process must have at least one child process, but it can have many. Great. We are going to go with the asterisk because there are processes without child processes, like this one, and the next one, and the next one. You all follow? Great. It's not difficult. One of you said in the assignment discussion last week that you did the document type declarations already, and it was like banging your head against a brick wall. And perhaps it is at first, but when all the pieces fit together, it's actually quite simple. Like everything in life, right? All right, now we have defined the elements, and next are the attributes. What attributes are present in this document? They were defined with the at list. There's only one attribute inside this document, and it's the ID attribute, which belongs to process element. And the syntax went along the lines, the at list keyword, then the element name to which the attribute belongs to, and in this case it's the process element, and then the attribute's name, then the attribute's type, which is ID, and then the required implied fixed thingy. And it said in the assignment requirements that each of the processes has an ID and it's required. Great. And now we're finished. We have written the document type declaration for this document. And when you're working with when you have a computer to help you, you need to write, obviously, a valid document for the assignments. But in the exam, when you don't have a computer to work with, of course, the grading is not so strict. It's strict, but not so strict as in the assignments. And when we are happy with the document, we can just copy-paste it into the validator and see what it says. And this is the usual case. Errors found while checking this document as XML. And actually my next slide, or the slide after that, is tips for using the validator, how you use it. And the most important one is always look at the first error and fix it and revalidate. Because if you fix one error, that can mean the other errors go away as well. Okay, let's see what's the problem and if we can fix it. Space required after the element name, and it seems all of the errors are like this. Syntactical in nature and easily fixed, right? So it says that after the element name there must be a space, and later on this lecture we are going to discuss the syntax rules for XML, which you're going to get in the exam as well. Now we have fixed, I fixed all of the errors, and now we can see that it's successfully checked as XML. And if it says checked as XML, it means that the document is valid. If you remove the document type definition from here and revalidate, it actually says that it was checked as well-formed XML. So it means there was no DTD to check against. It just checked the well-formedness. So in other words, the rules specified by the XML specification. All right. Now that I have the chance to talk, I'm going to show you one of your submissions for the for this assignment. One of you did it well well, some of you, let's say this way, did it quite interestingly with a different structure than shown here, and also with a DTD. I think you can guess which kind of a structure it is. I actually discussed these kind of structures in the assignment discussion, but here is the extra assignment document, and if you look at it first, well, there's nothing wrong with it per se, but this was one of the things that I discussed in the assignment discussion. Do not put data into the structure. Do not mix data with structure. In this case, each of the elements are named as the processes that they define or that they represent. Do you understand the difference? So there are no process elements. There are elements with the element names of the processes. Do something with your head if you understand this, or if you don't. Okay. And when you do this at first and then try to write the DTD, it means that writing the DTD, the DTD looks like this for the same document. And again, this is not wrong per se. The document is valid and the DTD is valid. But if you think about the XML and it is supposed to be extensible, you are not writing a one-time solution or one-time DTD for a document. If you think about the real-world scenarios where you have a process tree, of course, in an operating system, processes come and go. And if you try to add more processes in this XML document, it's no longer valid because you need to change the DTD as well. Yeah, if you mean the process names, yeah. Do you now understand what I mean? So if your operating system spawns a new process, here, let's call it whatever, the document is no longer valid. And if I remove one of the processes, the document is no longer valid. And this DTD is useless because the document structure cannot change even as little as if you add a process or remove a process. Same with the assignments. If you name each of the region elements according to the region's name, you cannot add more regions to Finland or provinces to Finland without altering the DTD. I hope I saved this. But in this case, you can add more processes in the process tree, and you can add as many levels as you like. So the processes, in this case, which do not have child processes, can have children, and they can have children, and they can have children, and so forth. And this is still valid. If I change the star mark to plus, that means that each of the processes must have a child process. Yeah, and it continues forever, if you understand. Each of the processes must have a child process, and it never ends, so it's never valid. Do you understand? The plus sign is, well, it's great for many things, but in this example, this rare example, it cannot be used. Yeah. Great. There's one other thing I want to discuss about the assignments, now that I have the chance. There was a document like this. This was submitted for the extra assignment 1B. And I talked about indentation in the assignment discussions last Thursday. And indentation is for the human reader, obviously. The machine doesn't care about indentation or lining. But what's wrong with this document? Yeah. Yeah, there are barely any child elements. It's indented wrong. So, actually, kingdom and phylum are actually on the same level, even though they are indented further. And then again, class is on the same level as kingdom and phylum, and order is on the same level as kingdom and phylum. Do you follow what the problem is? Yeah. There are a lot of tools in the internet, or actually in the built-in in the text editors, which can indent the text or XML or HTML documents for you, so you don't have to worry about indentation yourself. Now, if I if you're using Linux or OS X, you can install a program called XMLint, which does the indentation for you automatically. And we can look at the output document, which is indented automatically. And this is the, actually this is not, of course, I output the wrong document. Sorry about this. It's Tuesday already. And now it's indented as it should be intended. And now you can clearly see that there are no, well, practically no child elements inside the document. The kingdoms, phylums, classes, orders, families, and genii are all in the same level. And if you look at the honey badger animal in there, you cannot tell to which family or phylum or kingdom it belongs. Great. Any questions about the DTD? Yeah, if you have the DTD in a specific file or in a different file. Yeah, we'll get that later today. Yeah, great. So the DTD you're going to write in the assignments are internal, or so-called internal DTDs. They reside within the XML document. But there are also external DTDs, so you can use the same DTD with different XML documents. So you need to write the DTD once and use it as many times as you like. In different documents. Okay, great. That's the end of the practical part. And then about the logical structure of the XML in theory. There are some tips for the practical parts, or should I say more tips. You should analyze the real-world scenario like we did in the process tree. If you are working with countries like in the assignments, mandatory assignments 1 and 2, you should think about how you would or someone else would expand or extend this document. So if you have a country called Finland, perhaps someone wants to add more regions to it, add more towns to it, or perhaps add another country altogether. So of course this is not an exact science how you analyze a real world scenario, but these are things that you should consider. Of course these we discussed earlier, and this as well. How to prepare for the expansion using document type definitions. You can see in the example, mandatory assignment example in Optima that the document structure is ready for additional countries, additional regions, additional provinces. And if you go with the attribute-centric approach, it's often difficult to add more complexity in the structure. So go with the element-centric approach. These we discussed two already. The validator.w3.org is the only official validator for XML and so forth. Use that for the, well, let's say for the last minute validation. And as you saw, you can validate by direct input. That's the one I use usually. Or you can upload a file or write the URL, URL, for the validator. And start with the first error and fix the first error and then revalidate. It's often the case that the other errors go away as well. So don't be frightened if it gives you 100 errors or 200 or 300. Perhaps fixing one of them or the first of them will fix 50 more. Great. Now about the, well, theories and philosophies behind the DTD or document type definition. Languages, a language is a set of character strings from a given alphabet. And, well, languages can be roughly categorized in formal languages and natural languages, and both of them have syntax and semantics. And, of course, formal languages are languages, well, languages like with which you communicate with machines or computers and with which the computers or programs communicate with each other. And about syntax and semantics, these are terms that we use often on this course and probably you're familiar with both of these. And syntax is the syntax of a language consists of rules expressing the ways the strings are composed from symbols of the alphabet. So when you're learning, for example, a programming language, the first thing you usually learn is the syntax. And the semantics express the meaning of the syntax, well, from the point of view of the interpreter. And, for example, different people understand the same sentence differently. And then formal languages, set of character strings from a given alphabet and composed according to exact rules. And again, we are going closer to the programming languages and the XML specification and ultimately the DTD. So, if you, well, let's take an example. If you see a character string, for example, a sentence, you can pretty easily see if it belongs to Finnish language or English language or so forth. Or if you are an experienced programmer, you can see a piece of code and you immediately know to what programming language that piece of code belongs to. And there are formal languages as well which are not, well, human defined or or don't require human activities to evolve like the genetic code. Of course, we have our own set of rules to express genetic code, but it lives and evolves without the human activity. Great. Examples of formal languages, I believe you're familiar with these. These were discussed in the first lecture, I believe. HTML, XML, some programming languages like C++, C, C#, expressions in algebra, social security identifiers in a country, and the said genetic code. If you have any questions or comments, I seem to find it hard to give lectures using someone else's slides, but if you have any discussion you want to do or discuss things, please do. Great, I think this is also a recap from the first lectures. But then, to the EPNF, or extended Bakusnauer form. It is a formal grammar used, for example, in the XML specification. And this is actually something, I'd like you to pay attention to, because in the exam, you most likely have to, write XML and DTD. And, of course, you are not required to know the syntax by heart, and you get the EPNF, you get the XML specification in EPNF or extended Bakusnauer form in the exam for the relevant parts, of course. And I'd like to, show you some examples on how to read the formal grammar that is EPNF. And when you should take a look at the XML specification in advance and learn how to read the EPNF. Of course, it's not asked of you to write EPNF, but you need to read it in the exam if you don't remember by heart the XML syntax. The rules are of the form simple, 2 colons and an equal sign, and then the expression. And we'll look at examples later. And simple is the name of the part, and expression describes the structure of the part. And in the XML specification, there are literal character strings in Unicode, and they are inside double or single quotation marks, like these examples, the element and the less than exclamation and square bracket character strings, and these you are familiar with in the DTD. And there are also names of the structural components which have underlines under them, and then there are symbols that refer to Unicode characters, meta symbols, and additional notations. Let's take a look at example of each of these. The meta symbols, there are these main meta symbols possible. The first 5 are also used in the DTD. You remember the cardinality operators, question mark, plus sign, star sign. And then there are alternatives, which are also used in the DTD. You can specify which child element an element has with a vertical line. Then grouping with brackets, and you can specify ranges or exclude ranges with the square brackets. If you're familiar with regular expressions, these all metasymbols are used there. Okay, great. There are additional notations like comments with the forward slash and asterisk, like, for example, JavaScript. And these are examples of the actual XML specification. So the syntax rules were in the form of name of the element and then the expression. For example, in this case, a document is something that consists of prologue, element, and some miscellaneous stuff. And when you see this kind of notation where you have an underline, well, where some part of the text in the specification is underlined, it means that that part of the specification refers to another part. So if you want to know what you should write instead of element, you look at the element part of the specification and see what element consists of. And I know it's quite difficult to read because you have to jump around in the specification to see how you write XML, or what the syntax is. But I believe that by doing the assignments, you can get the hang of the basics, and, well, if you need to, then check what the syntax looks like or check some parts of the syntax from the specification. So hopefully you don't go in the exam and remember nothing about the XML syntax or DTD syntax. I believe each and every one of you remembers something about the syntax. Great. And as I said before, it's not critical for this course, but can be very helpful in the exam because you get the XML specification in the exam. And that being said, of course, the grading regarding the syntax in the exam is not so strict as in the assignments, because in the assignments you have the W3C's validator to help you. Do you have any questions? All right. Let's take a look at another example of the XML specification. I'm not going to read all of this, obviously, and you don't need to understand all of this. But if we take one example or two examples, let's take one. The element declaration is of the form. Let's take an example how to read this. The element declaration is of the form character string inside the single quotes. So it starts with the less than exclamation mark elements text or keyword, then followed by S, and S points to one of these four characters. There were in Unicode, there were space, tab, carriage return, line break. And then the S is followed by the name. You remember this is the name of the element. And name points to here, and name is named start character and then zero to many name characters. And again, the name start character refers to this list of characters. And in a nutshell, they are the capital or lowercase letters A to C. Z. And then the name characters which follow the name start character, in a nutshell, the lowercase, uppercase letters from A to C, then numbers and the underscore. These are pretty much the only thing you need to remember about element names. Then the name is followed by the S, or, well, space, tab, line break, and then content specification. And content specification is, well, the next one in the specification. Empty, any, mixed children, which we discussed in the start of the lecture. So character strings, empty, or any, or then the mixed element content declaration, or the children elements inside the brackets. And if you read that further, you can see here on 47 that the children are choice, sequence, and then perhaps one of these cardinality operators after the brackets. But I believe that the, well, practical part of this is much simpler than reading the XML specification. Great. Then about the declaration of DTD, one of you asked how to define an external DTD. Here's one example. So the DTD can be internal, so that means the DTD is included in the XML file with a syntax like this, which we discussed earlier, doc type followed by the root element's name, and then the element and attribute declarations inside square brackets. Or the declaration can be external, which means that the DTD is inside another file. It's usually with a file extension .dtd. And it's referenced in the XML file. Instead of defining the elements and attributes inside square brackets, you write the keyword system and then the absolute or, well, relative reference to the DTD file. And this way, you can use the same DTD in, well, as many XML documents as you like. And obviously, if you are using DTD, this is the way to go. Because you don't have to, well, you write the declarations in one place, and if you need to modify them, you modify them in one place. All right. That's about the, well, good things about DTD. It can be used by multiple documents, and in programming, well, terms, the DRY, don't repeat yourself, is very much present in the external DTD. And, well, as I discussed before, you can have the XML document with the internal DTD or, well, XML documents with references to the external DTD. And when you have an external DTD, it allows the creation of standards. So the X in XML came from extensible. It's a language with which you can define other languages. And I believe one good example is XHTML. In each XHTML file, you have the reference to a DTD on the first lines. And if you follow that reference, it leads you to a W3C's website and on the DTD, and you can, well, obviously download it from there. Seems like I don't have a good text editor installed in this machine, so you're going to read it in Notepad. It looks like this. The DTD for XHTML, 1.0 strict. Great. If you want to take a look at it home with a good text editor, not Notepad. So it keeps the lines or the line breaks intact. And about the limitations of formal grammars, formal grammar can just be used automatically to check syntactical correctness and validity. But when you're talking about semantics, well, they can't be checked. If you think about, well, programming languages, the compiler or the program that interprets your code doesn't, well, it understands the syntax, but it doesn't understand semantics. If you tell it that all of these objects or variables are named cat, it says, okay, that's cat, but I don't understand what cat means. You understand what I'm trying to say? So the DTD cannot check semantics. It doesn't understand anything about semantics. You can say that the town name in Finland is Kissa, but that doesn't mean it's true. It can be a valid XML document and valid DTD, but it doesn't mean that it's semantically correct. About the limitations of DTD, well, one of the main limitations is that you cannot restrict content type, so there are no data types inside DTD except for the one really simple ones, like attribute data types, IDs, name tokens, character data. And you cannot restrict the amount of occurrences. We saw the cardinality operators, but these are the only operators. You can define the minimum and maximum of 0, 1, or many, but nothing in between. So if you want that a book has, well, 1 to 5 authors, that's not possible with DTD if you don't, well, use some kind of hack and, well, you know what I mean. I think Philip has talked to you about having two similar child elements inside the element. You just repeat the child element's name in the comma list inside the brackets. Yeah. But that's not very good if you want to have, let's say, 100 to 200 authors for a book. Here is an example about the semantics in DTD. You have an XML document with this kind of DTD, and the document is valid, but when you look at the red values, the contents of the elements, you can see that it actually is not semantically correct, even though this is valid and well-formed. So you understand what I'm trying to tell you about the syntax and semantics. A couple of words about the XML schema, which is, well, another formal language to define the contents of the XML documents. This is developed by W3C, and it's widely adopted. Firstly, XML schema is not required for this course. The only thing I want you to know about it is that it exists, and it's, well, much, much more rich way to define the XML document than DTD. And in XML schema, we can define the data types for elements and attributes. And also, the XML schema predefines some data types, and we can, well, extend those data types. Let's say that we have an integer data type defined by the XML schema, and we can inherit from it another integer. Let's say that's a positive integer, if you follow what I'm saying. You can use the predefined data types and, well, make changes to them or make child data types out of them and define them further. Great. The XML schemas, as I said, are much more powerful than DTDs, and they are much more used than DTDs, and they are extensible, so you can, well, use kind of like inheritance for the data types, and you can use XML, or the XML schemas use XML syntax to define the rules of the XML document. Here is an example of XML schema, how to define an XML document with the schema. And if you're interested, there is a chapter in the course book, which is quite a good read, not the chapter per se, but the book itself. And if you want to learn about XML schema, I advise you to take a look at the book. As you can see, the XML schema follows the conventions of XML document. So the rules of the document are defined like an XML document. They are inside tags, they are attributes with their values, and they are child elements, and so forth. Great. Just a quick word about natural languages. Languages are used by human beings in their communications, in a community. They may have written rules, but, well, usually, like pretty much like the genetic code, it always evolves, and, well, sometimes it cannot be controlled, and, well, so forth. And there are no explicit rules, well, regarding the language, or, well, depending on the language. Great. Characteristics of natural languages. As I said, continuous evolution, gestures, like hand gestures, something that you cannot define in a formal language like XML or a programming language. So you need to, well, you understand the differences between natural languages and formal languages. And again, the semantics, meaning depends on the interpreter, context and situation, and of course in spoken languages, tones and gestures play important role. And this goes without saying, and you know this already, XML is a formal language, but then again, there is always some natural language inside an XML document. And these pieces of natural language in an XML document are usually in the content of elements, perhaps element attribute entity names, attribute values, and comments. And again, for those of you who made it this far and listened to me at home, please make the distinction between structure, metadata, and data. Like I discussed in the beginning of this lecture, don't confuse the data with the structure. In the example, don't put the process names as element names. That's wrong. And of course, you can use comments inside the XML document just like in HTML or with the same syntax as in HTML to define or, well, describe the structure of your document to others. And perhaps to yourself, if you read it later. And this is a bad example for the need of semantics. If you look at this XML document, let's say that if a machine looks at this document, it doesn't care what the elements are called in order to understand the document. It doesn't understand the document or the natural language inside the document. In any case, but if a human or a person reads this document, it's quite difficult to understand. What is this document about? Element AAA, element RKI, and so forth. What are these? What is this XXX attribute with a value of 5? And this is why we need to use and we use natural language inside the XML document. The element names, attribute names, and so forth. This is a better example for semantics, or for the need of semantics. Great. Now, last slide, I promise you. Oh no, this is not, but in any case, last slide with actual content, tips for the assignments. If you don't fix your XML documents according to the practices discussed in the assignment discussion, writing the DTD will be very, very difficult for you. So if you follow a convention where you write the data in the element names, or if you use this kind of practice where you name each of the elements differently, even though they represent same kind of things in the real life, it's going to get you in trouble in the DTD. I believe that the practical example I showed at the beginning of this lecture made it abundantly clear. I hope so. Great. And again, read the assignments carefully. You don't get a passing grade if you don't meet the requirements. Of course, if there are any ambiguities in the assignments, of course, that's counted in your favor. So if there are different ways of doing things, all the different ways of doing that thing are acceptable, of course. And please don't submit those TXT documents or HTML documents, because this is an XML course. It's a big mistake, but it's very, very easy to fix. So fix your documents before submitting them. And if you have any problems, come see me in my office or ask in the assignment discussion. I try to answer the emails, but it's always, always difficult and it takes a lot of time. Great. And if you're doing the extras, don't expect to get maximum points with these kind of structures in the extras. Great. I hope you all do the extras. They are great practice for the exam. And of course, in real life, we are not here for the exam, even though it sometimes feels like it. Right. No, if you did get a passing grade, then no. But for the next ones. The assignment 2 will continue from the first assignment. Great. Any other questions? There are additional readings if you want to read them. If you don't, don't. Thank you for your attention. See you next Thursday.